And I'm delighted to have with me an actress who will be embodying one very special diva in Terence McNally's play Masterclass, inspired by the classes Maria Callas gave in New York during the 1970s. She'll be playing that lovely diva, Maria Callas, at Guildford's Yvonne Arnault Theatre. I'm really pleased to welcome to the show Stephanie Beecham. Good morning, Stephanie.
Good morning. How lovely to talk to you.
Oh, pleasure to talk to you. Thanks so much for joining me.
You're very welcome.
It sounds such an exciting role you're going to be playing.
It's fabulous. It's really impassioned and it's a glorious evening. I hope everybody really gets a lot out of it.
Oh, I think they will. We're going to talk about that in just one moment. But, of course, many of our listeners will know that you have a home in Malibu. But I have to say how nice it is to be speaking to a fellow Hertfordshire lass, because I grew up in Potter's Bar.
Potter's Bar.
And I'm right down the road.
My first boyfriend lived in Potter's Bar.
Really? Only the best from Potter's Bar. Well, I remember the old Bulls Art Centre. I spent many a time performing in. Did you discover your creativity in Barnet, or was it later
in
life?
I was at Queen Elizabeth Girls Grammar School, and I played Electra there. They said they were going to do a play called Electra. And I said, and they offered me the part of Chrysothemis, and I said, no, hang on a second, what did you say the title of the play was? And they said Electra. I said, I'll play that one. I haven't changed, have I?
Wonderful. I mean, start small, Stephanie, with Electra. I mean, start with the Greek tragedies.
Well, my sister says she's been waiting for me to be as good since.
Oh, only a sister can say that.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh. Now, is it really true that you told an interviewer that you were not from Barnet, but from Casablanca?
Yeah, I just thought Barnet was really not a place to come from. I thought it was, you know, I just thought, it's too dull. I'm not that dull.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the only lie I've ever told, and it's trailed me ever since.
Nah.
I'm sure I only bought a house in Morocco just to say I could nearly not be telling a lie anymore.
Oh.
But I just thought Casablanca sounded so much more glamorous. In fact, Casablanca is a terribly dull town.
Having been there now, yeah. you're like, oh, I wish I hadn't said that now. I'll stick with Barnet.
Yeah, I'll stick with Barnet.
Now, of course, many people know of so many iconic TV series, but I guess you had a real love of film, because Casablanca in particular. Did you ever imagine you'd work with the likes of Brando and be directed by Death Wish director Michael Winner?
It wasn't part of what I had planned to do. I thought I was only going to do French films and Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm.
I've done very little Shakespeare, and in fact I'm not that interested. I've never yet been in an entirely French film, so I suppose you could say I'm completely unfulfilled.
Oh, no, a different route, I would say. A different way of trying things. But, I mean, certainly many actresses bare their soul, and I guess the ultimate in exposure is the nude scene, which you partook in. But it would seem that Brando was something of a modest man. Can you tell us about that?
He just wanted to protect us.
Did he?
It wasn't his modesty at all, it was mine. He knew that I had a nudity contract, and I couldn't break it, and so he wore the largest Y fronts ever known. I don't know how they got them so big. And he also wore Wellington boots. So that meant that I couldn't be seen from more than the waist upwards, and thus he protected me. But then that's been our relationship all the way through. I really miss him a lot.
Aww.
As a friend.
Yeah, so lovely. How wonderful to appear together. And who would have thought of the modesty, you know, to have gone on to appear in The Last Tango in Paris? But as I say, he was protecting you. But talking,
he was also protecting the story.
Mm-hmm.
He felt it didn't require it.
Yes, that's so important, isn't it?
That's typical of him.
Oh. Well, talking of Paris, you studied in Paris Mime before you attended.
It was hardly studying, yes, it was a devotion for a while,
mm-hmm.
A very pretentious devotion, something that you definitely get up to in your late teens. But it was very fascinating. It was very fascinating to study mime and to on the end of having studied ballet. And I thought that was what I was going to do, that I was going to teach deaf children to dance.
Yes, yes.
But it wasn't to be.
It's talking of that, it's very interesting, isn't it? Because last year on my show, I had Hearing Dogs for the Deaf as a guest.
Oh, that's one of my greatest charities. I have a, I have a, a, I, I, I'm sure lots of other people have Spotty as well, but Spotty is my hearing dog. And Spotty always sends me a Valentine's card and a Christmas card and a birthday card. And I pay for Spotty's training.
Oh, wonderful. Yes, we had Adam and Baxter. Baxter was the dog in the studio, good as gold. I didn't let him press any buttons, but no, he was wonderful.
Because people don't realise that hearing dogs can be tiny. They can be chihuahuas if they take well to the training.
Absolutely.
They don't need to be big. What size was...
He was a terrier.
Yes.
Yes.
A terrier mix, no doubt.
Yes, it was. Those
mongrels are the brightest dogs.
Definitely.
I've got two of the most disgraceful-looking dogs at the moment.
Really? Oh. Yeah. They're very, he's got a book out actually as well, Baxter, so they're great, aren't they?
Yes. Hearing Dogs is a fabulous charity.
It is, it's wonderful, it's great to have them on the show, and I'm so glad that you're supporting them as well, it's wonderful.
No. People don't realise how lonely deafness can be, quite apart from anything else.
Yes.
And to have your little person who will always let you know if there's danger around is just so exciting.
Yes, that's right. With Adam, he had an implement on so that we could actually speak on air. It's very intricate, but yes, he's completely deaf, really.
Wow.
So, yeah, wonderful.
I'm so lucky with my deafness. I only have 40% hearing, but it's mono. So I've never heard in stereo. So I don't know. We laughed when we started rehearsals, saying, well, I wonder how it's going to work, this half-deaf actress playing Maria Callas, who had one of the best years in the world.
Yes.
But it seems to be working all right.
Yes. I was going to say, did you find out, you know, during your research of Maria Callas, did you find that she very much picked up on music? Was she a natural at picking up the sound, or did she read music?
No, she lived for it. The play is very much an examination of what sacrifices you have to make to become a great artist, quite apart from the fascinating details and her sort of inner life that you hear in monologues. When you're not hearing her teach, it's a very moving evening, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also funny. It's not just drear, and she's quite witty.
Oh, fully rounded, isn't she? Definitely. I mean, her effortless style is so obvious, but seeing her in her latter years so svelte, it's hard to believe she turned herself from a heavy woman into a very glamorous lady.
You know, that was a tapeworm.
Was it?
Yes, great sale.
Oh. Because she thought that she was very like an ugly duckling, didn't she? Very fat, clumsy and unpopular.
Yes. She had an unfortunate body, and she turned herself into a style icon. I mean, she really did. It really was, wasn't it?
Yes,
one.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Do you think she carried that?
Some people say that helped that was part of the cause of her voice failing so early, that her over dieting.
Yes, it must really affect that. I mean, I'm not a singer myself in that category, of course, but you can imagine, obviously, you do see the larger opera singers, and sometimes when they lose weight, I guess it must have some effect
on
the body.
Well, I don't know, because now they've got some sopranos who have got 22-inch waists, and they still have managed to use their ribs, you know, and expand them and come out with a sound that I is unheard of, and definitely was unheard of when Maria was singing. She was one of the first people to look as fabulous as the role she was playing required, and which hadn't been done before. You know how many fat, lumpy old Aidas you've had.
Yes. I mean, how did Terence McNally, obviously the playwright, do you know how he got to know so much about her? Did he research it, or has he worked with her?
I've read every book now that there is that has ever been published on her, and so must Terence. I'm sure that he saw her live, which unfortunately I never did, not live.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and I've seen everything that there is on film, but not live. I think that, but as the other day, sounds so showy offy. The other day, I was talking to Faye Dunaway about Maria, because she's making a movie about her at the moment, and I said, you know, are you having McNally's cooperation? She said, I think McNally's over Maria now.
Oh.
You know, sort of, that phase is gone.
Yes.
He expressed everything he wanted to in his play, and he really, he did a good job.
Absolutely. He's lived and breathed for many of years.
Yeah.
I believe that you actually went to see the play. How many years ago was that? Did you see
this
many
years ago? 15 years ago in New York. Zoe Caldwell was playing it. My feeling was, somebody is playing my role. And then I forgot all about it. And then just recently it's come up again, and here I am doing it.
Wonderful. All
careful
good things
what you
come
ask
around.
For.
Absolutely, yes, be careful what you wish for. But of course, speaking of film, as we were earlier, I believe that the world renowned film director, Franco Zeffirelli, uttered words that which every actress wants to hear. You are Maria Callas.
Yes.
How did that conversation come about?
I went to see him for something, and he was busy, and then he looked up and he literally fell back in his chair and said, you are Maria Callas. And unfortunately, somebody else owned the rights at that time for the film that he wanted to make. And so in the end, I didn't play it for him. But that did intrigue me and set me on the path of beginning to find out about her life.
Wonderful. It set it off, didn't it? But what do you personally think that Zeffirelli saw in you that reminded him of her?
I think it was literally my face.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there is a remarkable resemblance.
Yes.
From certain angles.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm now in love with her passion and envy her ability, musical ability, obviously. And I really am very hopeful that I am doing a respectful rendition, if you see what I mean.
Yes. Well, I mean, all the signs were there, weren't they? Not only physically, but, like you said, the spirit and persona.
Ah.
And I believe a friend of yours had a dream. So it seemed the
Ronnie
part was
Roberts
destined.
From Tenkyo. I never know whether I'm going to thank her or hit her. Because this is a heavy-duty role to be playing. But she had a dream that I channeled Maria Callas. And she told Jonathan Church, who directed us, directed me. He runs Chichester, and that's how we come to be doing the Bath Chichester production. Anyway, it came to be.
It did indeed. And I mean, talking of Ronnie Roberts and Kenko, I mean, you've played so many women with spirit, haven't you? Dynasty, you know, the Colbys, rather. Tenko. It's wonderful, isn't it? Would you say that you're very much attracted to women who may be somewhat misunderstood or are quite strong and demanding?
I love finding out the soft, vulnerable underbelly of the people who have to be so defended and fierce. And finding out how they really tick.
Yes.
Or in the more fictional characters, making sure that they are fully rounded.
Yes.
I love my bitches.
I think it's been mentioned that you're in a spin-off called Battle of the Bitches with Joan Collins. Did you relish that part?
What was that?
Oh, I think I said it was about some season-long Battle of the Bitches.
Oh, that was just
that
some
a bit of fun?
I mean, that was just some... that was... publicity. I mean, that was stuff. No, Joan, what a stand-up dame she is.
Mm.
Now, she's doing Panto this year.
Yes.
What fun.
Wonderful. I mean, we've talked about working with Marlon Brando, but what was it like working with the legend of the epic films, Charlton Heston?
Oh, my man, my man. Oh, what a gent he was. I mean, he's another one I miss so much. He was so lovely. He was such a leading man. He cared so much about everybody. He was the perfect example of a leading actor. You know, he just looked, took care of everyone. Mind you, he used to say to me, as if our children, the people that were playing our children, were our children. He would say something to me about one of them and say, would you take care of that, my dear?
He's believing the part, totally.
Believing the part.
Oh,
yes.
So wonderful. It's lovely to hear, actually, that people come across on, they're actually the same off screen as they come across. He always comes across so caring, so gentle,
yes,
but so strong.
I said, come on, how come you've got these ideas about gun laws and stuff like that? I said, you were with the freedom marches in the 50s. And he said, well, if my son Fraser is correct, it's old age. So, I mean, you know, he did have some very strange ideas that everybody's allowed to carry a gun. But that is in the Constitution, and that does come more from the cowboy side of things than believing that people in the hood are meant to be carrying Uzis.
But yes.
Anyway, apart from that, yes. He was perfect.
Oh, wonderful. So lovely to hear. I mean, you've certainly proved to be such a versatile actress.
Thank you. Did the fact
that Callas was regarded as so versatile a performer and a dramatic talent...
Yes, extraordinary. She could play many... you don't normally have a bel canto singer who can also do the heavy German roles. You know, she was extremely wide in her range. She could go from Verdi to Wagner. You know, she was fabulous,
tremendous.
But she used up her voice on being over emotional renditions. She was a wonderful actress. I think that was the real secret of her.
Yes, I mean, many people would say her dramatic and personal tragedies may have overshadowed Callas the artist, but certainly Leonard Bernstein didn't believe that. He called her the Bible of opera.
Yes, I guess
that's a wonderful comment. But for someone who was forced to sing as a child by her mother, it's amazing what she's done.
She was damaged, if you like. She was damaged goods, but that's what makes her so fascinating to me. And she was oversensitive, and she definitely always felt very competitive. She didn't. I think she had very few female friends. All women were competition because she was always in competition with her sister, who she regarded as the pretty one, and she was the ugly one.
Yes. It's crazy, isn't it, when you look at her now to think that that's how she felt? But you live with it, don't you, as you grow up, I guess? But
I don't think you know till someone examines it later. Just how many influences? I mean, it's well known that Jung says it's all over by three. And the Jesuits say six. You know, how we are very, very young people is what we get lumbered with, coping with for the rest of our lives, I suppose.
Yes. I always remember one psychologist who was saying, I think you could play Lady Macbeth by the time you were six because you've stored every emotion.
Brilliant.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it? But I have to say, it's a wonderful part for you to play, and you're a wonderful actress to play it. So,
thank you.
I'm sure our listeners can't wait to see you playing Maria Callas in Masterclass, and it's starting at the Yvonne Arno Theatre on Monday the 17th.
Brilliant.
Until the 22nd of January, I believe. Yeah. Wonderful.
Yep.
Well, thank you so much for chatting with me today, Stephanie.
Thank you so much.
And I hope the run is a tremendous success.
Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye-bye, Stephanie. And that was my very special guest, Stephanie Beecham.